Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Vladdy crushes one. Left center field. You can forget it. That one gets planted in the palms. Out beyond the walking deck in left center field. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. charges his first of the spring. Absolutely no doubt on a two-run homer from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Hits that breaking ball. A missile to left, and you can forget it. He had an idea on the prior pitch. He didn't miss the second. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. tees off his second of the spring.
The beautiful sounds of spring training are back. The Blue Jays continue their Grapefruit League schedule this afternoon as they take on the Atlanta Braves at 1 p.m. on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and the Sportsnet app. Check that out today. And someone that's going to be down there getting the pulse of spring training is Shai Davidi, Sportsnet MLB insider and columnist, joining us this morning. Shai, how's it going?
Not too bad. How are you guys?
We're excited. It's been fun to turn on the TV and the radio and hear the sounds of our lovely Sportsnet broadcast and hear all the inside of what's going on down there. It looked like an incredible weekend in terms of attendance. It looked like it was jam-packed down there, a buzz in the air. What's it been like covering it from up close and personal?
Well, spring training is always great, and this year was a little bit weird because the World Baseball Classic, the training started a little bit earlier than usual, so it felt like a really long period of time where they were just sort of practicing baseball as opposed to playing baseball, and finally getting into games this weekend, I think everybody was a little bit relieved, excited that it had finally arrived, and there's some really interesting baseball to boot, so definitely made the wait worthwhile, and you know, I think now it feels like things are actually happening.
Okay, so we teed this up before we brought you on, and you're really good at doing this for us, so we're gonna ask for advice, but it's exciting to watch spring training because you get to see the guys back in action and you get to see players that have high expectations, players that are going to meet that, and some players that might fall short in the first two games. How do you properly uncover spring training takeaways for fans and for those that analyze the game without being too excited about the highs and without writing off the lows when they've happened in one or two sample sizes?
Yeah. Okay. So I think first off, you have to kind of remember everything with a grain of salt, mm-hmm. right? Because players are at different levels of preparedness. And sometimes players are just going up there to look for at the plate, for instance, to look for how are you tracking the breaking ball? How are you tracking the fastball? What is your timing like? Where the swing and anything may happen is completely secondary to trying to capture a feeling. And the same thing on the mound where, you know, a pitcher may want to say, you know, establish his changeup. And they may throw far more changeups than they normally would, and maybe in counts that they normally wouldn't, just because they want to find the grip on that pitch. So you have to be really, really careful by reading into what the results are. And, you know, you have to kind of keep in mind that spring training is sort of one long process. And everything is just a building block on the next and a building block on the next. And as you're getting towards the end of the camp, okay, well, then you're starting to see things essentially take shape a little bit and can put maybe a bit more stock into what you're seeing the results. But ultimately, and this is really hard to judge, it's about process for the most part as opposed to results. And each player has their own goals, which makes evaluation really, really tricky.
Yeah, you can definitely excuse some results, but you can get excited about a couple things that you did see. And I think there's reason to be excited about the two innings we saw from Yusei Kikuchi, giving up one hit, striking out five, kind of playing with the batter's clock
a
little bit.
He's got a beard now.
He's got a beard. He looks like he's gained a little weight, a little heavier, a little stronger. Reason to get excited about Yusei Kikuchi's beginning to spring training?
It's a really important step for him, no doubt. But there were still a couple things that if you're looking at it, you're like, okay, well, there's still some important steps to take, right? You know, fastball command has obviously been a big focal point around him the past couple of years. And he only threw 8 fastballs in that outing and only 2 of them found the zone. So that isn't necessarily ideal. But his slider was very good, or his breaking ball, and the 2 variations of it. One is more slider cutterish, a bit harder. The one's a more curve slurvy is how they're describing it. And that's a bit softer. That was really effective for him. So that's a great piece. But I think the Blue Jays would like to see his fastball be in the zone a bit more than it was. That's going to be an important point of progression. But, you know, anytime you go out into a spring training game and you get 14 swinging strikes in 33 total pitches, you know, you've definitely done some very good things.
So what's Kikuchi's demeanor like? Because I think that it's impossible to avoid the stress and maybe the pressure that maybe he's been feeling, or knowing that last season obviously wasn't ideal and he's had the offseason to prepare. I've obviously seen an opportunity to talk to him, or at least through an interpreter, about this season and what his goals are. Does he seem as confident as he looked on the mound?
Yeah, for sure. And look, he feels pretty good about the changes that he made in the offseason. But ultimately, he knows he's got to live up to the expectations. And he acknowledged that after the outing Saturday, that, you know, this is about proving that he can do it. And nobody doubts the raw tools, right? Like, you saw the breaking ball. You know, you've got like 95, 96 from the left side. You know, you've got a split change that's an absolute weapon too, on top of everything. Like, he's got everything he needs to be really good, but it hasn't translated, and he wants to prove to himself that he can do it in the big leagues. And he did it for essentially half a season with the Mariners 2 years ago, when he ended up being an all-star, but not over an extended stretch. And he knows that the Blue Jays need him to do it as well. And that exists. He's going to get some more confidence based on what he did Saturday, but look, until it's happening on a consistent basis in the regular season, you can't say that he's turned the corner. Like, we thought, you know, last year when he had the great May, that he'd kind of locked in on something and was going to take off, and then it didn't happen. So, you know, that could potentially be an ongoing battle for him this year. But at this point, you want to latch on to any positives that you can, and he's certainly given everybody a few so far.
All right, so baby steps and excitement around Kikuchi, and I think that can be said for Nate Pearson as well, who we saw back in the fold. He had 101 on the weekend. He looks good. I don't know what our expectations should be for Nate Pearson this season. What do you think they should be?
That's really the million-dollar question, right? It's like, can he? First off, can he stay on the field, right? Mm-hmm. That's the biggest one. And if he does, then can he be good with his fastball location? Can he get the slider over on a consistent basis? And is that curveball going to be a weapon for him as well? You know, 2 of those 3 things happen, then he's going to be a good reliever. If all 3 of those things happen, then he's got a chance to be an elite reliever. And I think the Blue Jays are just sort of taking a wait and see with this as well. And, you know, even in talking to him a bit yesterday, it feels like he is too. You know, he was saying that, you know, the past few years he's always just been pushing and trying to find a way to break through in the major league team, and just not necessarily stressing, but just thinking about how is he going to get there. And, you know, he's been so star-crossed throughout his career with a variety of different ailments and bad luck that, you know, at this point he's just trying to enjoy where he's at, just trying to not think about the bigger picture and just let his abilities take him where it's going to go. And that may be a good approach for him. And I think that's sort of the approach that everyone needs to take with him. It's just like, let's see what this is. This is an uber talented guy with a very, very hard to get skill set that it hasn't translated. And with players like that, you just keep giving them opportunity, and you hope that it eventually locks in. And he certainly got the ability to make it lock in. And if it does for him, you know, he could be an absolute weapon out of the bullpen.
if the Blue Jays could handpick anyone to set the tone for spring training and the season, it'd probably be Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And it seems like Vlad has done just that, hitting a pair of home runs over the weekend. What's, you know, we all know what happened last year with the discussions, the movie quote, and lots of excitement and intrigue, of course, when Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is around. But what do you make of his approach, his vibe? Is anything different about Vladdy this year? Have there any discernible steps being taken in the right direction to continue his upward ascent into the upper echelon of Major League talent?
It's funny, and you know, he's tried to sort of play down all that kind of stuff that, you know, I'm looking to rebound or I'm looking to show people what I'm, you know, 2022 was an aberration and he's 2021 guy or better. But, you know, just talking to people who know him well, people who are around him, it really seems like he's out to show everybody that, yeah, last year was a blip and that wasn't what it's going to be about. You know, and you know, those two home runs, they weren't just sort of those wall scrapers. You know, the one Saturday in particular off David Bednar, the all-star closer for the Pirates. I mean, that is that's a monster shot against a guy who can really make hitters look silly at times. And you know, to be that locked in that early is a tremendous sign. He's got obviously a bit of a push with the World Baseball Classic mm-hmm. coming up. He's going to play for the Dominican Republic, so he's got to be ready a bit earlier than usual. But you know, just the people around him really say that he's out there to show everybody that last year was really a fluke in a negative way and was just a one off, and that 2021 is the real thing, and he's certainly off to a good start in that regard.
We're speaking with Shai Davidi, Sportsnet MLB insider and columnist from Dunedin right now. So this weekend we got to see some new faces as well, some prospects. Some of them look absolutely jacked. anybody that really caught your eye and that Blue Jays fans can start to get excited to see maybe make an impact, not maybe this year or just in the future that we might not have thought too much about?
Yeah, I mean, when you say absolutely Jack, obviously Addison Barger comes to mind. And, you know, John Schneider making a couple quips over the weekend about his size of shirt. he's certainly someone, a really interesting prospect, someone who's really catapulted himself into the upper edges of the Blue Jays farm system and really onto the team's radar. He's made an effort to get bigger and stronger since he got drafted. He was drafted as more of a slasher type of hitter, and he thought, okay, I've got to hit home runs if I'm going to make the jump here. And so he's worked relentlessly to get over that hump, and now he's hitting home runs. And you saw the one that he hit Saturday against the Pirates, another extra bases again yesterday against the Yankees. And, you know, he's someone who at the moment doesn't have a spot on this team, but is essentially playing to establish where he is on the pecking order. But he's a shortstop. He's a shortstop by training. He's going to play some third base, and he's also going to get some work in the outfield. So the Blue Jays are clearly trying to create multiple pathways for him to get to this team. And if there is a need at some point because of injury or some other reason, he very much could be one of the first call-ups up.
I'm excited to see his fit as well. And Alejandro Kirk is someone that we have eyes on as well because he is absent waiting the birth of his child. Of course, he's going to have to miss the World Baseball Classic. I wonder if there's a level of maybe not concern or just thought about how they're going to mix him back in here after missing some time and his preparation to ramp up for the season.
Yeah, I think the concern would have been if he had gone to the World Baseball Classic after missing, you know, 2+ weeks already. That would have made it pretty hard for him to just build up the type of rapport and relationship and, you know, the physical endurance as well as acclimation to the new rules that you're going to need as a catcher at this point. But with the World Baseball Classic off the table, still more than a month to go before opening day, the Blue Jays are feeling a lot more comfortable about that runway. You know, John Schneider was saying yesterday that they've been monitoring his work and they've been getting videos and reports on what he's been doing at home. And, you know, they feel good about where he's at. They don't think it'll be too much of a transition for him once he does get into camp. But at the same time, you know, downtime is downtime, and there's going to have to be some catch-up played here too. So he's a very important part of this team. He's definitely got a few key new pitchers that he's going to have to learn. And, you know, I think this is something that bears watching in terms of just how fast is he able to get ready and get used to the new rules and all the management that the Blue Jays have put in and around that.
I can't imagine, Shai, that someone like yourself, who's going to be in, what, 200 press boxes, I guess, all told over the next 8 months or so, wouldn't appreciate the times that we're seeing from some of these games, like games that have a lot of run scoring clocked in at about 2.5 hours because of these new rules. However, we've seen some hijinks early on, of course, with games ending on batter violations, pitcher violations aplenty. Can Major League Baseball successfully roll this out this year?
Sure. And, you know, there have been some high profile incidents for sure. But, you know, like, and I'm going to obviously speak anecdotally because I've seen two games with it so far in person. But there, I really didn't notice it. Like, on Saturday, the first game, I was paying close attention to it to see how it was kind of managed. And then you kind of saw it wasn't an issue for everybody. Everyone was ready really quick, and it almost slipped my mind. And that is where it's going to get to, right? There are going to be those high profile incidents that get a lot of attention. There's going to be some, there are going to be some players who get really upset about it and get frustrated with it. But by and large, I think there's going to be, you know, after an initial bumpy period, a pretty good grasp of this, and ultimately people are going to enjoy the faster games, right? Mm-hmm. There was way too much dead time before, and it moved faster. You know, even in a game as long as, I mean, Saturday, the Jays and the Pirates scored 16 runs and they were done in under 3 hours. That's unheard of. And even yesterday was close to 3 hours, and there was a lot of poor pitching and a lot of walks, and it still got done in a relatively short time. Somebody was quipping after, is like, man, without the pitch clock, that might've been 4.5 hours out there today. So, you know, this is not going to be, I mean, there may be some bumps, there may be some complaints here and there, but I think for the most part, this is going to be much easier said than, or much easier done than maybe people expected.
It's interesting that you say that you kind of forgot about it, because I do feel like the TV networks are going to have a big say on how big of an issue or how big of a talking point it is. Because if you look at the two games that we could watch here on Sportsnet over the weekend, Pittsburgh, you could see it, you could see the clock, and you're watching the clock and it's giving you like maybe a little anxiety, but we didn't see it with the Sportsnet broadcast, and it felt like the game just flowed and it was really, really natural, and it really wasn't that big of an issue. So yeah, it might be like how the fan is served may kind of dictate how you feel about it as a fan watching it.
Yeah, I think there are a couple pieces to that, right? Like, first, there's going to be, I mean, from everybody's perspective, there's going to be the need for a little bit of fan education, right? Like, just understand what this is and how this works. Because there may be times where, especially if you're live at the ballpark and don't have the TV broadcast to help you out, you know, you may be confused. Like, wait, what was there a strike there? Why was that? You know, why is there a challenge on defensive positioning in this? And, you know, is the team really declining, the balk because they'd rather take the ball and play? Like, there are a few elements to this that can be confusing. So there will definitely be a lot of talk about it early. So I do think it's important for people to sort of get up to speed on just how this is going to work, because the mechanics of it are relatively complicated. The other thing with Pittsburgh and the pitch clock there, at the major league stadiums, the pitch clock is not going to be within sight of the cameras. It's going to be off to the sides where the pitchers can see it, the players can see it, but it won't be in the camera, so it won't necessarily be in your picture. And, you know, that may certainly add to some of that ease that you mentioned there, too.
You mentioned that spring training was different for a couple of reasons, World Baseball Classic being one, but this is also John Schneider's first opportunity to run spring training for the Blue Jays. So I wonder, how is John Schneider's spring training different than previous spring trainings, and what struck you about his approach through the early days here?
And there's been just a lot of fundamental work, right? A lot of work on very detailed stuff, be it, you know, creative pitchers fielding practice drills or creative infield drills, creative base running drills, just little things or just focuses on little things that pop up at different points over the course of the season and can end up making a difference in a ball game. You know, that's certainly an area where the Blue Jays have been a little bit loose over the past couple of years. And now they've got some guys who all around the diamond who are just better at that kind of stuff. You know, you saw Kevin Kiermaier, you know, making a good charge on a base hit, making a smart throw to the plate, and being able to get a runner. And you know, that's sort of one example, making sure outfielders are not only covering more territory, but also making the correct throws to bases, holding base runners, you know, to one base instead of two on a ball and play, little things like that. And so that's been a primary focus. And, you know, John Schneider hasn't just sort of run these drills out there. He's made it a talking point. He's been stressing it to players all throughout the offseason, saying, hey, these are the things that matter. This is how we're going to get better. This is how we're going to push ourselves beyond where we were last year. And, you know, that process is, it's not that Charlie Montoyo or other managers didn't do it, but it's more about the way that he's putting it front and center and emphasizing it that's been, to me, very noticeable.
Have you seen any Don Mattingly returns early on, or just the way that he carries himself with John Schneider and their role together working on spring training for the first time, as we said, with John Schneider's opportunity to lead this team, just what Don Mattingly might bring as a maybe like a role model even in terms of developing this team?
Yeah, I think you see him with at first base when, you know, doing defensive work with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. a fair bit, just talking about, you know, these are little subtleties of how you field and how you get better, ways you can, make life more difficult for the opposition. You see him by the batting cage talking with different hitters. And, you know, to me, I think where he'll come most handy is during those points in the season when, you know, a hitter is going through a tough time or in the middle of a game where, you know, an opposing pitcher is just, you know, handcuffing the Blue Jays lineup, where he might be able to pick up something or say to the guys, you know, when I was in this kind of a situation, I'd be thinking about these things in the box, or, you know, this is what I used to look for against this type of pitcher. And he's got the credibility to say that, right? You're going to hear it differently from Don Mattingly because you knew he was in that box feeling the same things that you felt, or at least experiencing some of the same things you've experienced. And so that to me is where you'll see the biggest value in his presence being around. But, you know, he's certainly seems to be blending in well with everybody. And, you know, he and John Schneider seem to be building a very productive relationship together, which is, you know, in due course going to be tested.
Last one for you here, Shai, before we let you go. On Friday, we saw that Alek Manoah had agreed to or asked for, like, the salary renewal situation with the Blue Jays, asking for a renewal instead of turning down the raise based on the club's preset amount. Most importantly, what does this not mean? Because I think it's easy to jump to conclusions and say, oh my God, does this have to do with, you know, are they in a bad spot, et cetera? I know that you can break it down for us in terms of what it means and what it doesn't mean, which might be more important to Blue Jays fans.
Sure. And look, this part of the baseball salary system can be complicated for people because there's a lot of gray there, right? For, mm-hmm. You know, players who have 0 to 3 years of service time, they're called pre-arbitration players, and their salary is essentially set by teams, and teams can just continue to give them the minimum. They can give them small raises. They can give them big raises. They can sort of do whatever they want. And if a player doesn't agree to a contract, the team just has to renew him at the midpoint between what the player was offered and what the major league minimum was. And so the Blue Jays have a scale based on both service time and performance by which they reward their pre-arbitration players. And Manoah, just as he did last year, just as Bo Bichette did last year, decided against taking the the offer that the Blue Jays made, feeling that it wasn't commensurate to the value they provided, and opted for the renewal instead. And that ends up costing them money. But, you know, in both cases, they felt wanted to make the point saying, hey, you know, we appreciate the offer, but we disagree with the system. We believe our value is higher, and, you know, do what you have to do. And we're going to do what we have to do. And so, you know, I don't think this is about hard feelings or anything. You know, Al Kamanoa made the point a couple times when I was talking to him that, you know, he understands the system. The Blue Jays system is actually better than most clubs. But this is just one of the friction points that remains between players and owners. You know, this is another example of how young players become such great deals for clubs because, you know, Alek Manoah performs at an all-star level and is making a smidge over the major league minimum. You know, it's not necessarily a just reward for his performance or the revenue that he's generated for the club. But, you know, he's got a chance to qualify for arbitration a year early after the season. That will help him escalate his salary and sort of pull him out of the renewal phase. But he's under contractual control by the club for another 5 years. So, you know, this is his horizon is off in the distance in terms of when, you know, he might be able to be a free agent. It just more speaks to, you know, a wider issue in the game in terms of how young players are paid and whether there's a better system for it.
And after his season last year, I can't blame him for thinking he's higher value than that, because I think we could all agree that he's been a massive part of this team so far and will hopefully continue to be down the road. Shai, appreciate you joining us this morning. Enjoy the start of spring training. We'll hopefully catch up with you down the road and see how all of our early excitement fades or grows.
See if Kikuchi's still dealing.
That's right. Thanks, Shai.
That's right. Kikuchi watch. Yes. Yeah. Have a great week, guys.
You as well. Thank you so much. That's Shai Davidi, Sports and MLB insider and columnist, coming live to us from Dundee. He wrote a couple great articles. Check that out on sportsnet.ca, breaking down what to take and what not to take from the first two games for your Toronto Blue Jays, who went 1-1 with a couple great moments and a couple moments where he's like, ooh, this is why we play spring training, because things are a little shaky.
Mm-hmm. Great start. I think the Blue Jays content mill's full force.
Oh, big time.
Of course, we'll be talking a lot about this week, but it is the NHL trade deadline this week, so maybe it goes full force after that. But
be nice.
Yeah, we got to sprinkle in that Blue Jays talk because it's a lot to get excited about.
It sure is. Speaking of things to get excited about, we're giving away tickets to the Motorama Custom Car and Motorsports Expo, presented by eBay Motors. We'll be at Toronto's International Center March 10 to 12, and we're giving away passes. All you have to do is text the code word to 590-590, and you'll be automatically entered for this giveaway. Today's code word is Motorama, M-O-T-O-R-A-M-A, just to help you out there. Motorama, 590-590 for your chance to win. We have another code word tomorrow, so be sure to tune in for another chance to win tickets to Canada's largest indoor motorsports show. That's Motorama, 590-590, and the tickets will be for March 10 to 12 in Toronto.
There you go.
I can say I've never personally been to that, but it sounds exciting.
I have not either.
Maybe I can take a look at my inner tie rod, which was fixed and successfully healed. Everybody, no problems at all.
Yeah, you could put your car on display at Motorama.
I think we're good with that, doing that. All right, 590-590. Let's take a break. We have winners and losers on the other side. You can send in your wake and rake pick at 590-590. We'll tee that up at 8:30. No Toronto sports tonight, so you get to be creative. We have a college basketball pick already in there and a couple NBA and NHL to whip around. But winners and losers at 7:30, and then Frank Saravelli to break down what's going on with the trade deadline. Actually, the trade week that's been.
Mm-hmm.
Timo Meier move last night. It looks like Kane is pending a move this week once they get the money set. And, of course, more blockbusters that happened all weekend long. On the other side, winners and losers.
Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
All right, we're back on the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Justin and Ailish, our Monday tradition is winners and losers. Rounding up what happened this weekend. Obviously, winner, me, for the puppy draft.
Couple reasons that you're a winner, actually.
Is that right?
We neglected to talk about this in the first hour. Were you thinking too much Ailish content? Could there be too much Ailish content?
It's the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish.
Yes. Well,
it's Justin first.
When you present it. I guess when I present it too. Actually, on the podcast.
Sounds better that way.
On the podcast art, it is Ailish and Justin.
Is
so
it?
So that's the official.
It's just alphabetical order, I think.
No, I think it's, you know, precedent. Seniority, okay. A lot of
anyway.
Things. Anyway, big. I mean, it's amazing how like life just like flows naturally for some people.
What does that mean?
So you've been doing the Leaf in arena broadcast
mm-hmm.
to this point in the year, and you said goodbye as the Leaf in arena co-host over the weekend. I guess you can finish the story if you want me to tell the story. But they presented you with a customized 4-FAR 27. Mm-hmm. They got the number right. It was a nice moment. I was sad I couldn't be in attendance to witness it. I thought there'd be tears. There were no tears,
nope.
Apparently. You were
Regal.
Just like, you were...
Charles cold, Davis taught me.
Cold-hearted a little bit?
No, God, no.
No? I was, just Regal.
I was
just
cold-hearted.
How to,
come on, you
well,
know me.
Well, you didn't cry. I mean, you...
I was very
no
touched
emotion?
By the...
Touched, but you kept it together.
Yeah, because I'm a professional, and there's 20,000 people staring at me, clapping.
It's hard. I think it's
I
hard
I wasn't going
to
gonna be...
Yeah.
I was trying to hold it in. But yes, I did end my stint as the in-arena host for the Maple Leafs as Danielle Emmanuel, who I was covering for on maternity mm-hmm. leave, is coming back from her baby, which she had in the fall. So I'm really excited that she gets that opportunity back. I was only covering temporary from mat leave, and she got the opportunity to choose when she was ready, and she's ready. So she's coming back for the stretch, which is going to be dynamite, but I'm not leaving.
Yeah, you're still a big part of the Maple
yes,
Leaf family.
So I'm not leaving officially like... See you never. I'm going to be doing some other stuff with them.
But you got the jersey.
To be determined. Yes, I got a custom. It was really sweet. So during the second timeout of the second period, they mm-hmm. did a little video board tribute, and they put some photos up of me, and then my co-host, that's Scott, did.
I'll just be honest. That's a big time slot. Like, when do you think Gio's getting commemorated for the shot blocking
record? Hopefully the very first.
Probably the exact time you were commemorated
so.
For your contributions to the Maple Leafs organization.
It was very sweet. They did a little video board thing, and then Scott said some nice words about working with me, and I obviously got an opportunity to say thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got to not just throw t-shirts at people, hand out jerseys. So that got the crowd fired up. A good way to go out, give a couple jerseys to some
good.
Kids.
It's
and
pretty
then,
good.
Yeah, it was really sweet.
But you'll
sweet.
Be ready for night one of the playoffs when you'll be wearing your 4-FAR 27.
I got a 4-FAR 27.
You'll be ready to go. And I say life flows beautifully because let's face it, this new dog.
It's perfect.
You're going to be busy.
Buddy, I know.
I don't know how many nights you can be at the arena.
No, it's perfect timing.
So
I get
perfect
the dog,
timing.
I get some opportunity to watch Leaf games from my house, which I haven't really got to do much.
True.
And just sit there and take it all in with my puppy.
One great opportunity leads to another, so you are the biggest winner.
That's very sweet if you think. I also got... all the staff I worked with over the last, I don't know, half a year, I guess, signed a stick for me, and I thought that was
wow.
really sweet. And I'm going to put that up on my wall. So
there you go.
It was a wonderful experience. I'll still be part of the fam, but we'll decide.
That's pretty good. You get all
next.
Like the gifts on your way out, but you're still there. You just show up the next day, and you're just
it's nice.
Yeah, I'll be helping host
it's
this.
Lovely.
What they don't do Jurassic Park, Maple Leaf
maybe
Square. You'll probably
like
be like
stay tuned.
Throwing jerseys and T-shirts then, but
that'd
you'll be
cool.
around.
Anyway, great. It was a really nice weekend, so I appreciate all of that. And
so the
kindness.
Big winner,
and a lot of people were like, "Where'd you go? What happened?" So there's your answer, everybody.
They kept everyone on the edge of their seat
well,
there.
The content plays, Justin.
Of course, content plays.
Okay, biggest winner in the NHL though, Linus Ullmark.
Mm-hmm.
Not only did he get the first goalie goal in Bruins history this weekend, the 16th in NHL history. This doesn't happen often.
No.
From his crease, a sauce down the ice, directly straight down the middle of the net. It was awesome. You know what? But the other thing is, why do the Bruins get everything? They get a goalie goal. Like, enough of them. But I love a goalie goal, so I'll celebrate them.
Honestly, if you're filling out the memorable season bingo card...
The Bruins
have them. What are they? Dabs? Bingo dabs? Those little things?
Yeah.
They're dabbing
dabbers.
Up that thing.
The whole thing
they
is
are
covered.
They're dabbing that thing up because
they don't
they
even
have
need that free square in the middle.
If you're having, yeah, they don't. A memorable season, you have all these things. You might have a Rocket Richard winner. You might have a Hart Trophy winner. It'll be hard to pry it away from Connor McDavid's hands. But you have that superstar player. You have the goalie goals. Mm-hmm. You have the Vezina Trophy. You have
the
Coach of the Year. You have the historic
wins, points.
Every
win, you break another record.
Yeah, every
you never lose at
they're
home.
They're doing everything. They filled that bingo card up. It might be one of the most memorable seasons in Boston sports history.
That's crazy.
And what have they done for the last 25 years? Win everything.
So he gets the first goalie goal in Bruins history. 16th in NHL history. That's playoffs and regular season. First goalie this season with 30 wins. 34-1. 34-1 is his record.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first 30-win season of his career. And the second fewest games to 30 wins in NHL history. Tiny Thompson with the Bruins in 1929-1930 season. Took him 35 games.
They have
That's
it all.
That's crazy.
They actually have it all. It should happen more often, by the way. Just this, you said the
you
second
think?
And the last second goalie goal rather in the last decade. First since Pekka Rene did, I think, in 2020. Why doesn't it happen more? There are empty nets in what I would say
it's pretty risky.
30% of games you see an empty net scenario, maybe more.
Yeah,
about 30%.
It's exciting.
There should be more.
Congrats!
Attempts.
Just don't do anything else this season, okay?
I don't know. I don't know if the good dimes are going to stop rolling for the Boston Bruins. Anyway, I got to go. You say Kikuchi is a winner.
Nice.
I got it. I want to take the one opportunity I may get to put Yusei Kikuchi in this category. He looked like a new man, bigger, bulkier, playing with the rhythm, confidence, absolutely like hopping off the mound after striking out his batters five in two scoreless innings. Yusei Kikuchi, a big, big winner. One of these stories early on from spring training, even if we have to take it with a grain of salt, at least we have a positive thing to say about the Blue Jays' potential fifth starter. He's in the driver's seat.
He is. He's got an opportunity to grab this, too, with Mitch White out and the opportunity to solidify that. It's step one of a long journey. Yes, we understand spring training. You can't write the story yet of the Blue Jays season, but what a great first chapter for Yusei Kikuchi. And you're right. I felt a little bit of joy in my heart for him because last season was really tough. I felt for the guy. It was hard to watch. They always zoom in on him when he's sitting in like the dugout area. And it made me sad at times. But this made me confident a little bit. So you know what? I'm going to just live in the moment. Okay. Blue Jays fans, embrace the excitement and the happiness that we saw from Yusei Kikuchi and let that carry you to the next start, okay?
In terms of like players who can have a sizable impact on the season, Kikuchi's up there.
It's Barrios and Kikuchi.
Barrios is number one, and Kikuchi, let's say Kikuchi just gets back. He had an all-star first half once. Let's say if it's something short of that for maybe sizably short of that, but something like really positive. If you can be a real positive as this fifth starter and you don't have to talk about it, you don't have to worry about getting that at the deadline. It's not the thing that's hovering over the entire season where you make progress through four starts and then you give some back every week. You just give it back and give it back and give it back. If that doesn't happen, if they don't go into that cycle where Kikuchi's just giving it back, it's going to make a big difference for this team. Kikuchi's got a chance to, you know, turn this thing around here.
I
don't want to get
so
too excited. He's my Pearson.
Okay.
You give
okay.
a winner to Pearson. Are you giving a winner to Pearson?
I think so. Nate Pearson has had a really difficult journey to this point. And the journey is not over, but we saw him get an opportunity to once again start the chapter of this next book, hopefully we're writing, on Nate Pearson's career. And reading a lot about what he's done to get to this point, he's really like readdressed his training, how he carries himself, what his expectations are. And it's got to be really difficult to rejig your expectations on yourself as someone that was such a highly touted prospect who was supposed to come in and be this dynamo starter. And now he's probably going to be used in a completely different, well, he will be using a completely different role than he probably ever expected. And so to reevaluate yourself and to just accept the fact that your outlook is different and to come in and try to be positive and to try to erase the past that you've had to go through or at least learn from it. It seems like he is in a much better spot. He's grown. He's experienced. He's 26 or whatever. Like, he's not a young prospect at this point. He hasn't pitched nearly enough to say that he's got what he needs under his belt. But happy to see him get an opportunity. The media coverage around it seems very positive as well. And it's just like you say, Kikuchi, it can go one way and we really root for it to go that way because if it starts to trickle in the other direction, I feel like it's untenable in Justin Cuthbert's vocabulary.
Beautiful. I just said, like, Kikuchi, can he have a big, can he make a big impact? If Pearson plays a sizable role for this team, he could be that impact guy as well. We've been talking about the bullpen sizable? Forever. If he can pitch at the major league level, if his body holds up, if he can have an impact, then it should be a positive impact, or else he doesn't have a spot on this team. So there are players like, so you just hope some things that are unknowns work out. If these two, which are huge unknowns, can contribute positively to this team, it can have a big impact.
Okay, can I do a loser?
Sure.
MLB.
Really?
I
have MLB in the winner category.
I think that they are to be, how about the Venn diagram middle?
Okay,
because the Braves-Red Sox game obviously ended in like maybe one of the most brutal situations that we've seen in sport in a while. Automatic strike call because the batter takes too long to get into the box. Not only does that suck, it's the ninth inning. It's bases loaded with two outs. Like, you cannot script a worse time for this to happen in spring training. Obviously, this isn't the World Series, but hello, this is the very first weekend of this new rule. And already there's this controversial call where everybody is in uproar. Understandably, the game ends on this call, which we are already trying to figure out. Like, and Shai put it great. He said, the fans are going to need some education. Well, if that's your first step into the education of this rule, it sucks because everybody hates it already. I think that there's going to be a lot of moments like this through spring training, and this is an opportunity to like work out some of the rough parts. But is there going to be discretion or not? If there's not going to be discretion, then we're going to see that. That's fine. Like, that's the rule. That's the rule. But it really felt like there could have been some discretion. And so now we keep an eye on the MLB, how this happens moving forward. If they're going to keep this rule hard and fast, and it like doesn't matter if it's the World Series in the same situation, ninth inning, two outs on a two strike count, bases loaded.
Yeah.
Then that's the precedent you're setting. But I really feel like that's not going to be the case.
Well, I'm glad it happened when it did, because I think it needed this. Okay, everyone's got to pay attention to this. I will say, though, it would be a nightmare if this happened at a big spot. It would be. It would be a complete and flat-out nightmare and a joke.
But what if that's the rule? And it is the rule.
It is.
So what are you supposed to do, bend it?
You're playing 162 games, then you're getting to the postseason. These players need to figure out what the rules are and abide by those rules, and I think they will. They'll get enough reps over the course of the season, hundreds and hundreds of at-bats, to put themselves in a position where they understand, you would hope. However, I hope there's a gentleman's agreement as well. Like, if there are managers coming off the bench.
You can't have a gentleman's agreement.
Yeah, you can if it's like, okay, did he start into it? Are we settled in where it's not like.
Because someone loses the game on that too and wins the game on that.
I get it, but what I'm saying is, like, if we have managers in opposing dugouts yelling and screaming maybe early when it gets down to it, that's just going to cause a complete uproar. Like, there should be a little bit of a blurred line. Like, I don't want a horn going off if the batter doesn't get in. But if he takes his time, the umpire knows that there's a violation, it's called. That's fine, because you are not following the rules. However, I think there has to be, I just don't want horns going off, buzzers going off, people yelling and screaming. Just have these guidelines and play within them. And if you step outside the guidelines to degree where it's really obvious, then make the calls.
I think there can't be a gray area.
Probably not.
But
maybe this is hopeful
but
my part.
Yeah, and that's the problem. Is I would love for that, Justin, but I can't be the way it is, because if there's a gray area in the World Series in the ninth inning, bases loaded, and you're the team on the losing side of the gray area, it still is an awful way to lose a game.
This is going to be very challenging, I think, in the postseason. Like, they should have all the opportunity in the world to get acclimatized to this.
But that's why you got to be hard and fast with the rule right now.
Things do change. The environment is different. How the environment affects things, I'm not really sure.
So what about in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
I think they'll figure it out.
In the final game, and there's a kicking motion, and we're down to it.
It is what it is.
So it's the same thing. It is what it is. If this is the rule, this is the rule.
The kicking motion is subjective. It's like, oh,
this could be subjective. Was he entering the box?
But what I'm saying is, it should be. That's what I'm saying. It should be somewhat subjective and a little bit lenient. Leaning on the side of lenient. If it's objective and a horn goes off before he steps in the box, or as he steps in the box, or as the pitcher starts into his windup, that's a problem. You're disrupting things.
But then follow the rules.
It's too disruptive. They are following the rules, but it's like, it's just not hard and fast in like these really strong and unbendable dividers between when you start and when you get into it and when the batter's ready. Like if it's really, really rigid, it's a problem. If it's flexible a little bit, it could just work perfectly.
Okay.
Everyone playing along and not being like drill sergeants about it. If everyone's a drill sergeant, it's going to be miserable.
I don't know, Justin, because this is a great text in that I was thinking the same parallel. There's no gray area on the shot clock, whether it's the final of the NBAs or not.
Yeah, and shot clock's different, though.
Why? It's the same thing.
No.
It's a clock because, counting down.
Because
and you have to get the ball
has
off
to be,
before.
The ball has to be off. But, like, everyone has their different way they start into their windup. Batters approach the box in different ways. It's not as, again, objective as a shot clock or something else that is timed end of any period, whatever. I get that, but you can have a horn go off in a basketball game to signal the end of a shot clock because it's a violation. You're going to have a horn that could potentially go off every pitch, thousands upon thousands of pitches, horn. We don't need that.
I don't know. I just think, honestly, we're going to have this discussion weekly. There's going to be moments where this rule is awful and there's going to be a team that loses and it's going to be like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. But if this is the way the rule is going to be deployed, then deploy it all year like this. Just have some consistency and then everybody can, like, it's going to take some learning from the players, from the fans, from the broadcasters to get this, all the rules. There's lots. It's not just shot clock. It's not just the pitch clock. But
And the problem is that ump show is a term for a reason.
Oh, yeah.
These guys love to be a part of it, and some umpires will probably, if there isn't a horn, umpires will approach this a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. They'll be a little bit more strict. It will be a part of the season, of course. You hope that they just get in a rhythm where most of the time it's not.
Okay.
I will
Give
say,
me some
though,
more.
big winners, though, because games are flying by, and I love it.
Yeah. It's nice for us.
Loser, the Western Conference, the NHL.
Big time.
All the talent in the world is headed east. Got Timo Meier now going to the Devils. We might have Patrick Kane going to the Rangers. What a first-round series that's going to be. Tanner Jeannot going from west to east. They all follow O'Reilly, Tarasenko, Horvat. What's the biggest move from a Western Conference team we've seen so far?
None.
Evgeny Dadonov,
Sick.
Who I think is one of the most... Basically, I can't believe Pete DeBoer signed off on Evgeny Dadonov. He was what helped... Maybe the biggest factor in sinking Vegas last year was that he was on that team and they went and got him and replaced Marc-Andre Fleury with him. And now you go out and you're the Dallas Stars and you get Evgeny Dadonov. Doesn't make any sense to me. It feels like the Western Conference is wide open, right there for the taking. Someone's just got to make that big move. But for right now, it's an arms race in the Eastern Conference and the talent is in the East and West. Considered losers.
East for sure winners because now the Sabres are making this a battle. 3-game win streak. It's exciting to watch them. Like they really put together some work this weekend as well. Tage Thompson with another hat trick. Like I'm excited to watch the Sabres hopefully make this a competitive play down the stretch. More winners. Anyone that went to the Clippers in the Kings game this weekend, my Light the Beam team, second highest scoring game in NBA history for Russell Westbrook's debut as well. Did you see what the score was?
I did not.
176 to 175, double OT win for my Beam team.
Wow.
Combined for 44 three-pointers, the most in NBA history in one game. Only 19 points short of the NBA record, which was in 1983, 186, 184, but that was in triple overtime. So anyone that went to that game probably had an absolute time.
Two losers, Leaf X's. Kasperi Kapanen claimed off waivers by the St. Louis Blues. And then another guy that Kyle Dubas was right to give up on, Andreas Janssen was a part of the deal that sent Timo Meier to the New Jersey Devils. Just cast-offs, former Leafs, just trying to find homes. Kyle Dubas can at least, chalk that up as a winner or chalk that up as a W, getting rid of those two players when he did.
I have Chris Kirk as a winner. So winner of the Honda Classic this past weekend. It was his first win in quite a while since 2015. He also took some time off. 4 years removed from taking a leave of absence from the PGA Tour due to some like personal issues that he was facing. So it was really great to see his return and a win. That final putt was emotional. It was really great to see. He spoke about his journey. It was just a really, really great moment to see. Congrats to him. A really big battle to get to this point. And that's what you want to see in sport, is people overcome hurdles in their life. And that's where he's at. So congrats to Chris Kirk.
Three more quick losers. TFC loser. Ooh. They lose Insigne to injury and lose the game, their opener in D.C. after giving up two goals in stoppage time. And then me and Jake Paul. Losers
I
together.
I was going to say, where's Jake Paul talk me this
and
morning?
Me and Jake Paul, losers together. Me, because I staked my reputation
you
to him
sure
winning.
Did.
And Jake Paul lost a unanimous decision to non-boxer Tommy Fury.
I thought it was split decision.
Oh, sorry. You're right. Split decision. Jake Paul did get...
The big boxing guy over here.
And look at you. Yeah, he did get one of the scorecards. But Jake Paul, what do you do now?
I want to hear from the text line about this fight because it was so highly anticipated.
It was sloppy.
And I want to know what everyone had to say about it. I know that Jake Paul, obviously a loser, but then he came on and was like, you know, I had a couple things. Like, I felt flat. I got really sick twice in this camp. I injured my arm, but I'm not making excuses after he made, like, four. And then he's like, oh, you know, the Drake curse. Drake, loser, bet $400,000 on Jake Paul.
Ooh.
The Drake curse is back. He loses money. But Jake Paul's kind of post-game stuff or post-fight stuff was a little bit additional to the loser column.
I was thinking to myself, what does he do now? And I'm like, well, he can do anything, I guess.
Yeah.
Because he's uber rich.
Let's take a break because we have Frank Saravelli on the other side. He's going to tell us the winners and losers from this past weekend of crazy trades. Are we going to be losers on Friday when there's no action to be said, or are there some things holding out for us and our entire day of programming that is based around the NHL trade deadline? Frank Saravelli on the other side.